Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lori Slutton, and I'm the CLP Records Manager, and I want to thank you today for taking the time to come and hear me talk about Trash or Treasure, dealing with the Records Compliance Week that starts on August 4th and learning what to do about your records. We might not have time for questions, so be sure that you type them in the chat feature or email them to me directly, and I will get back to you with what answers I can. So, again, let's just go ahead and get started now. So last time we had this conversation, we were talking about digging out and getting rid of our how to reduce paper in the workspace by getting rid of our non-records. You might remember that we talked a little bit about the fact in records management when there you have a records management when you have not had a records management program, that about 30% of your records end up to be things that could have been destroyed. About 30% end up being something that you can store off-site, and then about the rest of it, the 40%, is what you really need to have for your day-to-day business. So when we talked at length last time, we talked about how to identify those non-records that you might have to be able to be recycled, and we held that recycling non-records week in April. Non-record, if you remember, was defined as material of immediate value only. And then we define record for you as well as being that stuff, that anything regardless of physical form or characteristics that contain information relating to the conduct of the public's business, in our case, UC's business, and that was what a record was. So now we're going to get ready for a records compliance week, that first full week in August, and this webinar is going to provide you with some of the tools that you'll need for that activity. So the first thing that we're going to do, step one, is you need to look for your inactive records. You need to identify those. So what do I mean by inactive records? Well, as usual, I can pull out the definition in the records management policy, and this is an RMP2, and it says records that are no longer necessary for the conduct of current business, but they have not yet reached the end of their retention period. So anything that you're not needing for the day-to-day business or the day-to-day conduct of your business, and the retention period has not lapsed, those are your inactive records. When we talk about records management, we often talk about the life cycle of records. And what usually happens is when you create or receive records, you have a really high reference activity to those records. But over time, you tend to not have to use them as often. And there's sort of this, you can see by this chart, there's this time where you're really highly, highly active, and then you hardly ever look at them again, and that's the difference between inactive and active records. I talked a little bit about life cycle. I want to talk about that a little bit more. I always equate it with the human life cycle. You know, you're getting ready to have a baby. You do all kinds of planning. You're either going to create a baby or you're going to receive one by adopting. And so you have a whole bunch of stuff that you have to plan about how you're going to manage all of that. Same with records. Before you create them or receive them, you should be talking about how you're going to manage those records through their life cycle. Then they get created and received, and then, you know, you raise them, and they're in that active stage. Eventually, they want to go on their own, and they have their own active life. But then, eventually, they get to the point where they're no longer needed. Or, in the human kind of analogy, it's time for them to retire. So what happens when people retire is they either have really active lives or they really have inactive lives. And I always equate that with if they're really, really active, that they really are permanent records, which go to an archives where they're used for all kinds of reasons, or they're inactive where they have to be kept in a commercial record center or a record center where they're stored until their life cycle is over. And eventually when their life cycle is over, that's when those records get destroyed. Only about 2 to 5% of your records are going to be permanent records. And those are the ones that are going to live on forever. So that's what I think of when I think about the life cycle. So right now, we're in that part where we're identifying what records are inactive, which ones are ready to go on to that retirement center or go into the nursing home or whatever. So you've found your inactive records. Now what are you going to do? Well, the next step is you're going to look at the retention schedule and identify your records in the records retention schedule and see what the retention period is for those records. So I want to talk about the records retention schedule. So if you go to recordsretention.uclp.edu, you will find the retention schedule there. And I want to show you how to use it a little bit. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail because I only have an hour, but let's go over it a little bit. The first thing I need you to know is that it's better that if you view it Mozilla, Firefox, Chrome, Google Chrome, Safari, or Internet Explorer 9. So you're going to get the best results when you look at them through that methodology. The section that is in the red box is a lot of informational things that you might want to know about. So I'm going to start there. One of the things that you might want to know about is that there's a link to a webinar I gave on August 13th of 2013 when the retention schedule was rolled out. And that goes into a more in-depth discussion about how to use the retention schedule that I'm going to be able to provide you here. So you can always go to that link and go to that webinar and listen to it to see how to use the schedule. As far as that goes, you can go to this one too. There's also a link to RMP1, because in RMP1 it talks about what is going to be in the retention schedule. It says that those records for the campuses and the Office of the President are going to be in the retention schedule. Also the health science centers and the labs. But it goes on and says these things are not going to be in the retention schedule. And that's the regental records, teaching and research records, and medical records. So those things you presumably are not going to find in the retention schedule. In the outdated retention schedule, there were some things that were dealing with some of those, and until they get superseded, they will continue to be in there. But for the most part, you're not going to find those kinds of records in the new updated records retention schedule. So here we're going to go through that other part of the retention schedule where you're going to actually see parts of the retention schedule itself. We're going to start with search. So this is where you can type in a keyword and then click on search. So let's just put travel in there, and you'll get some results. Now, I could have done this on the web, but it's been my experience whenever I do a webinar and I do it on the web. The images are smaller than what you're seeing now, so we want to try to make it as big as possible, so we use screenshots instead. And you can see from these search results that there's 5 records that are found with the word travel in it, and it gives you an idea of what those are. Here's some suggestions about search. You might use a short term rather than a long phrase, and that might help you find things, narrow down your search. Also, using wildcards can help. For example, you can see I put layoff in the first one, and I got 7 results. When I put lay with an asterisk by it, I got 2 results. So that might help you limit your search if you have too many things. I tried using tax record, which was what it's looking for is anything that has tax and anything that has record when you have it like that. So if I use quotes on it, I'm going to get 7 results versus 157 results. Here I'm talking about broadening or narrowing your search by using not, or, and you can see again the tax record one had 157 results. When I put tax and record, I had 9. Different ways that you can do that. So let's go to those results that we had for travel. You can sort on any of those columns by clicking on the name. And we're going to go through each one of those columns now. And somehow I have the 4th column. Let's just play around a little bit and get this in the right order. So we're going to start with this one. Okay, what happened? All right, here we go. It's right here. So on this one, you can see that that first column is the records code. Now, the records code is only there to help you identify what you are looking for. It's when you're talking on the phone with me and I say, you're looking at 0001 asterisk, you can say, oh, yeah, now I see it. That's the only reason the code is there. The asterisk at the end of those numbers means that it was one of the updated items in the retention schedule. So the second column is dealing with the function of the record. This is that broad category that we have for a batch from the updated items. For those things that are from the other schedule, the one that we are in the middle of superseding, it's just the function and category that you'll find there. Oh, pardon me. I'm trying to find the right one. Somehow we got these mixed up. Here you are in the third column, and that's the function description, and that will provide you with a description of the function or batch. So you're only going to find that on the new category items. Now we'll go here. This is the fourth column, and this is where you have the description of the category. And that's going to describe any kind of sub-function that there might be. For the other items, the ones that are not superseded yet, you're just going to have the name of the record. Here you have the subcategory title. This is only when they're needed. So when you're looking at the retention schedules, you'll do a left-to-right kind of thing once you've done your search results, because this subcategory title area is probably where you're going to be looking the most at. For example, if you're looking for accounts receivable records like this is here, you'll see that the first one, that A1, is for those records used to support sponsored activities. So that's our grant records. So that's the financial records for grants. If you don't have those kinds of records, you're going to look down to A2, and that's dealing with financial records dealing with bond financing. So you're going to say, oh, I don't have that either. So you're going to look to A3. So you can see how you can go about maneuvering through that a little bit better. Finally, in this column, we have keywords. And this is one of the columns that we add to all the time because it'll help you with your search. For example, somebody was looking for layoffs, and they were looking for layoffs using one word, and we had layoffs using two words in there. So we added layoff with one word in there and layoffs as one word in there as well to help out with searching. This is the column that's going to tell you how long you need to keep the records. It will tell you how long to keep the official record as well as all other copies. This is just a retention rule so you can see whether or not you have to keep the records for permanent value or you can delete or destroy them. Remember that definition of record included regardless of physical form or characteristics. So a record can be something that's in electronic format as well as in paper, clay tablet, on the wall, a napkin, or whatever. So that's why we have the delete or destroy in there. And finally, this last category is dealing with comments. This is the area where you're going to find more detail about the records. You might find some prescriptive information, and I'll show you one of those in a minute. But it's also going to give you the justification for the retention, a lot of citations in some of them to show you what laws are applicable or whatever. There will also be a section in there if the record is confidential or restricted. And any vital, if they're vital records or other requirements, will also be found in this area. So once you get your results, you'll see that there's all of these hyperlinks in there. And most of the hyperlinks will go to the same extended results. The only one that is different is the comments hyperlink. That'll go to its own separate little page. So, for example, we've clicked on the hyperlinks for general routine office transitory records, and you'll have this very long description. You can see it starts with function, then it has function description, category, category description. It'll have a brief description, and then it'll have a bunch of bullet points. I want to bring your attention to this one specifically because it talks about source documents that have been scanned. We're talking a lot in the paperless, less paper initiative about how to get people to be electronic. And a lot of people have asked, if I scan my records, can I get rid of the hard copy? And this talks about that for you. It talks about that if it's created from the record, the hard copy that's there, which you created after where you've done a scan, you need to make sure that the record has been verified as accurate and stored in a proper record-keeping system. You need to make sure it meets authentication standards, that assure the record's integrity, reliability, and trustworthiness. And then it talks some more about the kinds of things where there are laws that say how you have to scan. There are laws that say things that you have to keep in hard copy as well. So that information is there. When you look at the comments section for that first one, that general routine office transitory records, there's a whole description in there about what a proper record keeping system is and some of the requirements that you might have to follow might be in the IRS requirements, FDA, or Federal Drug Administration requirements, or whatever. So hopefully that will be helpful. And that kind of shows you the prescriptive kinds of things that can be in the comments. I'll just show you another example of a different record that has the comments in it, and that's this one with compliance records. And you can see there it has 47 CFR. That's the law that deals with, tells us how long we have to keep those records. All of those comments are going to say this is a media-neutral retention schedule, which means that anything that we make or receive, regardless of the physical form or characteristic, is in this retention schedule. So we've talked about searching, now we're going to go through browsing. In the browse part, where you browse by character, you can click on as many of those categories as you want, and then you click on search, and then you'll get your results. In this case, we clicked on human resources, and we got 12 records that we found. If you want to see all the items in the retention schedule, if you click on full schedule, you'll get all of the items in the schedule. We currently have 324 items, but that number will go down as we continue to complete the retention, the update of the retention schedule. If you want to print out the full schedule, if you click on that, what will happen is you'll get a download of an Excel spreadsheet. A lot of people like that feature because then they can delete the stuff that doesn't belong to them and they're only looking at that spreadsheet for their records that they're wanting to look at. Biggest thing with that is that we often update the schedule. And maybe it's just adding keywords or whatever, so you need to keep coming back. There is a column in the Excel spreadsheet that says publish date, and that will tell you the last date that we've updated something in that part of the retention schedule. So if I find that I've spelled something wrong and I go in and correct it, you're going to have a different publish date, and that's how you can tell whether or not it's been updated, unless it's a formal update, and then there'll be some kind of announcement that goes out about that. And you can see there's announcements there, and we've had two announcements. We had one on August 1st, 2013, and then another one in April 21st or March 21st. So those are the two big rollouts that we've had on the retention schedule so far. Excuse me. Also on the retention schedule is you'll have an FAQ, which comes in. When you click on that, you'll get a PDF, as well as a PDF on the glossary. So if there's something in the retention schedule that you don't understand, you might check those two places and be able to find what you're looking for. Always, if you have questions or need help, I hope to be I'm available for you at either my email address or my phone number. So hopefully that will help you out a lot. Okay, step three, after you've found your inactive records and you've looked at the retention schedule, then if the retention period for your inactive records has lapsed or has not lapsed, that means that they still have to be kept. And in that case, you might want to consider storing those with unexpired retention periods at the commercial record center that we have, which their name is Recall. That way they're not in your way. It doesn't cost as much to store things there. It's 16 cents a month per box for them to be stored there, which is a lot less than the square footage in Oakland would be. So here's some tips on storing records off-site. You're going to want to have some boxes to pack. And when you think about packing those boxes, think about putting the records in the boxes that have the same project or type or subject in them into the same box. That way you're not having to pull so many boxes back to be able to retrieve the information you need. Every time a record center touches a box, that's where the charges come in. They have to pull the box off the shelf. They're going to charge you. They're going to put that box on their van. They're going to charge you. They're going to deliver it to us. They're going to charge you. So you can see those charges are what mount up. And that's why it's important to put only your inactive records in storage. So try to put the things that you think you would retrieve at the same time in the boxes. But also think about the retention period that's going to go on that box, because you don't want to call the box back and just destroy half of the box. So you want to make sure that you have the same disposition date on the box. Your record storage box should be a standard size. It should be 12 by 15 by 10. That way they don't weigh so much. They'll only weigh about 35 pounds when they're packed, which is It can be a problem for some people, but for most people, that they're able to lift that. When you're packing your records, if you have letter-sized records, you'll want to use the 12-inch dimension. For legal-sized records, you want to pack them on the 15-inch dimension, and I'll show you a picture of that in a second. You should pack your records so they're placed on end in an upright position in a standard record box. It should look like this. And the reason you want to have them standing on end is so that it's easy to retrieve things. You don't want to have to be going through a pile of them that you've just thrown in the box willy-nilly. You want to make sure that they're in some kind of order and it's easy to retrieve your records. It's advisable to keep records in their original folders to help facilitate access. If you don't have a folder label, it's harder to find the records that you need. Make sure that your record, your box, that when you have your boxes filled, that all of your records are facing the same direction and are easily identifiable. It's advised that you don't put your hanging folders in there or binders because that's just going to take up a lot of extra space and you're going to be paying for that space. So it's not economical. And try to leave 1 to 2 spaces into the space in each box because that'll help you when you're trying to find something. If the box is too full, it makes it really hard for you to retrieve records out of it. And when you're thinking about how many boxes you need, if you have a 36-inch lateral filing cabinet, one drawer is going to equal about 2 boxes. It might be a little bit more than that, probably about 2.3 boxes, but that's what you can gauge how many boxes you're going to need when you go to pack your records up. Do not use rubber bands because what's going to happen is those rubber bands are going to deteriorate over time, so they're not going to be able to keep the records in the order that you wanted them to be in by just rubber banding them. Do not lay your records on top of each other because that does not facilitate your retrieval of those records. And you should try to put the records in some kind of searchable order within the box. Sometimes what happens is people are putting they grab a chunk of records out of their file cabinet, put it in the box, they grab the next chunk, they put it in their box, so they're no longer in order. But you want to make sure that they're in order because that makes it easier for you to retrieve things. If they're not in order, you might have the A's through the F, but the E's are in a whole different box. So you want to try to facilitate retrieval by only having to retrieve one box if that's possible. Barcode labels and transmittal sheets are available to you through mail services. Every box that you send to recall must have a label on it that has a barcode on it that is provided by recall. And that's the unique identifier that you'll have for that box, for retrieval, for disposition, whatever. There are 3 items on that label that you need to complete. You need to figure out what your department cost center is, and that's usually a 3 to 5 digit code. Might be a digit, it might be alpha code for your department or unit. The destruction date. Now, no records are going to be destroyed without appropriate approval. We'll go through an approval process so the owner of the records can say, yes, those records are now eligible for destruction. They're not under any kind of litigation hold. Nobody is doing an investigation. I have no pending public records requests, and they're not under audit. So don't worry about that. But what you need to do is enter the 2-digit month and the 2-digit year for when the contents are to be destroyed according to the record schedule. A description. You should provide a brief description. You have up to 60 characters to provide that description, but you want to make sure that whatever you put there does not reveal information that should be confidential. Remove any labels or post-its that are on the box. Place that barcode label on the lower right corner of the front of the box. What is the front of the box? The front of the box is either of the 2 panels with a handle hole in it. But if one of the handle hole panels has a glued or stapled end, that really is the end of the box, the back of the box, so you need to use the front of the box for that. I told you before that you'd also need a transmittal sheet for mailing services. So this is where you would put your description on the transmittal sheet. This should be enough information for you to be able to retrieve the right box. And if you want to think about how long that record needs to be kept, really, it should be so anybody else could be able to retrieve the box that's going to be in that department. And you should review that retention schedule and identify the records with that information in the description, so you can have the, like, the records code in your description to help identify what the retention is. Again, you're going to have the destruction date on there, but you want to make sure that you have that information as well. Be sure that any kind of description that you give on the transmittal sheet does not reveal any confidential information. After you have your boxes packed up and you're ready for them to be picked up, you send the white copy of the form to mail services, and they will schedule a pickup for you within the next few days. Mail services coordinates the retrievals and the pickups from storage, so they have their contact information here where you email the mailroom. You provide the barcode numbers and provide the address for them so they know where to deliver the boxes. If you get your request in time for them to key it into recall system by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the retrieval time is normally the next day. Anything that's kept off-site should be reviewed annually so that you can make sure that the retention period has been met and disposition can be done on those records where the retention period has lapsed. I always want to say this, out of sight does not mean out of mind. A lot of people think, oh, it's out of my hair, I don't have to worry about it. But then it causes a lot of risk for the university for us to maintain things beyond their retention period. If you want to know more information, there is a website that has that, and you can see that the URL is right there. building-administrative-services/services/records-storage.html. Maybe it's just a slash, not a backslash. Okay, and here's their contact information for you. So we've gone through step one, where we've identified our inactive records. We've gone through step two, where we've identified them by the retention schedule. We've now boxed up all the records that we have to keep because the retention period has not lapsed. What do we do now? Well, for step four, we now get ready to destroy those records. So those records that have an elapsed retention period can be destroyed unless, and here's the big if, keep these things in mind. If you have a pending Public Records Act request, you can't just destroy the records. You have to wait till that has been satisfied. If you have a pending, foreseeable, or ongoing lawsuit, the records are on a legal hold until all of that has been resolved. If there's an ongoing investigation, and if there's an ongoing audit, then again, those things cannot be destroyed until those actions have been completed or resolved. Now, this is called a records freeze. So anything that's frozen, that means the retention period freezes as well. Here are some other circumstances that you might want to consider when you should not follow the retention schedule. If you know about a state or federal law or regulation that requires a longer retention period, that law or regulation overrides the schedule. And then you need to notify me about that requirement. So I will go to the Records Management Committee, who by policy is the one that establishes the retention schedule, to change that retention period for that record. If there's a legitimate business need that you have to retain the records longer than the period identified in the retention schedule, then please contact me to identify that need. I can also discuss that with the Records Management Committee to determine if the schedule should be changed. If they decide not, I can make an exception based on your business need, and I want to make sure that we've documented that exception so that we can show that we're doing things in the normal course of business and we're not just arbitrarily and capriciously deciding to change our retention period. So you have these things that can be destroyed. It doesn't meet any of those circumstances. What do you do next? You decide whether or not you have to shred those records. In the comments section of the retention schedule, you will see things that will tell you whether or not those records have things in them that might be confidential. Anything that contains personal, restricted, or confidential or sensitive information must be securely shredded. RMP 2 in Appendix B talks about that shredding stuff. So you can get more information there. It talks here about the fact that what to shred is really dependent upon the contents of the records. And if they contain information that could adversely affect us or our partners or the public, it can't be disposed of in such a way that it can be accessed. So they must be destroyed so they can't be read or reconstructed. If you have records that are intermingled so much that it takes so much time for you to have to go through them to figure out what's been shredded or what's not, you really should just go ahead and destroy them in such a way that all of the records are secured, and do that by shredding. RMP 2 Appendix B gives you some examples of things that would fall under that. And here I've just bulleted a few of them here for you: the confidential information, personal information, attorney-client privileged records, proprietary information or trade secrets, protected health information, personally identifiable information. There's also more identified in RMP 8 as well that you'll want to look at as you get to that point. So what about the rest of the records? You've shredded all those others, and you can recycle what you can out of the rest. And we want to encourage recycling because it's better for all of us to do that. So what else do you need to know about Records Compliance Week? Records Compliance Week is going to be August 4th through 8th, 2014. There will be shred bins and recycle barrels available. And we hope your department will purge your records with lapse retention periods, again, that aren't required for that record freeze. Anything that's found in your office, the parking garage storage areas, and at recall. If you need help, I will be available during that week for half-hour consultations. Call me or email me to set up times during that week, because I'll be available any other time via phone and email, but I will actually be on site on those days. The plan for me is that on August 4th, I'll be in the Franklin building. August 5th, I'll be in Kaiser. And August 7th, I'll be in the 20th Street. I might not have access to my phone during that time, so if you are trying to contact me, the best way would probably be email during that week. What else do you need to know about? I will be contacting people about their records that they have in recall. I have a list that recall gave me, an inventory that they gave me, and it shows destruction dates on it for the different records. And I'm taking those lists, and I'm going to be emailing people who are the owners of those records to say, I think these might be eligible for destruction. What I want you to do is take the time to verify the contents, because it might not have been you who did that inventory, and make sure there is not a records freeze, and then let me know if you approve of that destruction. I need that approval via email. Review the link article from this week and last week for more information about all of this. And finally, we're holding two contests. We're going with the funniest document contest, so we want you to send us the oldest or most out-of-date document you can find. And we're also having a who can guess the closest without going over how much we shred and recycle by weight. We've set up a special email account through ITS for this, and it's recordscompliance@uclp.edu. So if you send them there, we'll look at them and we'll figure out who the winners are, and then the results will be found in the link. And prizes will be awarded. Pretty exciting. A final reminder, just because we want to make sure we don't get rid of the wrong things. Usually in a purge, what happens is people get so excited they want to throw everything away. No, you can't. Make sure that the retention period has lapsed and that nothing is under a legal freeze, a records freeze. It's not needed for any kind of litigation that's going on or is foreseeable to go on. There's no investigation, there's no audit, and there's no Public Records Act request that's outstanding. Here are some URLs for you. There's the second one there on the list is where you're going to find, if you navigate on it, you're going to find information about records management for OP, and there's even a link that will go to training materials, which will include the recording of this webinar as well as the PowerPoint presentation. And that's it. See, I talked so fast. I went through 67 slides in only 35 minutes. So I want to thank you all for your time today. And I actually have time for questions. So let's go ahead and open it for questions. I'm going to put it back on
the conference has been unmuted.
Are there any questions?
I have a question. Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, hi. So if you have a record that's put under a record freeze and say the record, if it wasn't under a freeze, would be available, its retention period would expire in a year. So the freeze lasts for however long, say 6 months. Does that extend out the retention period? So the retention period now is a year and 6 months from now?
So the question is really dealing with after the freeze has been resolved and you've received notification that that freeze is over, then the retention period would go back to what it regularly was. So in your hypothetical where the question, the record has to be kept for an additional year and the freeze is lifted 6 months out from then you would have six more months on the retention.
Okay, thank you.
Lori, this is Leslie Clark. In my concern is that there may still be records with Iron Mountain and a lot of records where the original person who put the record there may no longer be in place in the same job or may have left the university or retired.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, other people can't get into those records because they're in the name of the original person. Do you know if that's happening or not, or have any of you experienced that?
Well, I know that we had some boxes that were being stored at Iron Mountain, and we only had one more individual who had access to them, and that was Judy Peck, but we were able to change the access rights so that I could be in there as well on those.
Can I say something?
Cases on whether how that's going to have to work. I don't, Leslie, if you know which part of Iron Mountain storing those records, I can start on those.
I don't, but one thing I was going to do is see if we could pull records based upon what departments are still paying Iron Mountain, and then see if we could tie it back to that department and then see if they know what's in storage. Only because we really should be either moving them over to moving them out of Iron Mountain and into recall, or more likely the things are so old that they could be taken out of storage and destroyed.
Right. What I would recommend is we make that a separate project from the records compliance week a couple more weeks before that's going to be coming.
Okay.
But I definitely think you and I need to work together on that.
Yeah. Someone else was trying to say something. I don't know if it was related to this or not.
Any other questions? Oh, I need to say one more thing, and that is that Office of General Counsel is not participating in the Records Compliance Week. They have their own activity that they do, so people from OGC will not be participating in that. Any other questions? Well, thank you very much for giving me your time. I really do appreciate that, and I'm looking forward to Records Compliance Week. Again, my contact details are here if you want to be one of the people that asked me to come in and help consult with you on what records you need to keep and what ones you don't. I'd be happy to do that. The week of August 4th through the 7th is when I'm planning on being there. So.